Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Now it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week, our writer Jimmy Israel with us from Cleveland, Arsalan Iftikhar, senior editor of the Islamic Monthly, with us from Chicago, here in Washington, D.C., contributing editor for The Root, Corey Dade, and also here in D.C., Tell Me More editor Ahmad Omar. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas. Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
What up?
Hey. What's happening?
All right. Well, you know, let's get ready to rumble. Okay. Nobody's that excited.
That was very good.
Am I the only person excited about George Zimmerman and rapper DMX? They're reportedly in talks to box each other next month. Damon Feldman, the owner of Celebrity Boxing. You might remember, you know, the Tanya Harding and Screech matches. I got quote fingers up. He said he's got 15,000 requests from people who wanted to see them go. You see DMX go against the former Neighborhood Watchman. Here's what DMX had to say about the possible fight. Drop that tape.
Well, I was challenged. I mean, I still haven't really decided whether I was going to do it. But if I did do it, whatever money was supposed to go to him would have to go to charity.
Nah, he's thank you for that. He's kidding. He needs the money. He needs something to keep him out of trouble too. You know, I'm actually okay with this. I mean, accused murderer Sam Shepard here in Cleveland, he was accused of the murder of his wife in the 50s. He went on to a prolific career as a professional wrestler. So if he can do it, I don't know why Zimmerman can't. I tell you, this is still America, last I checked. Corey Dade, where are you on this, bro?
Ready to reach through the mic?
You know,
do violence to
man,
you.
You know,
good luck with that.
Put it like this: Zimmerman won't be able to bring a gun into the ring. So you know, and with DMX in his current state, you know, he might act a fool up in there. I had to get that in. I couldn't help it. I'm sorry.
That was great.
You know, but you know great. You know, this is so interesting. I mean, Zimmerman, you know, his post-trial life is going down the road of the O.J. Simpson road to perdition at this point. You know, you know, you think about O.J.'s acquittal back in 1995 and his life subsequently after his bad acts, his questionable decisions. Basically, in the court of public opinion, he got convicted of that prior crime in retrospect. And at this point, with Zimmerman, every move he makes now, he is undoing any credibility that he built among his supporters. At the end of the day, you know, I don't have a position on whether or not the fight should happen. I think it is, you know, it sends a terrible message about this society, and that, you know, someone who can be, the perpetrator of that kind of violence against an unarmed boy could actually profit from it. And that's the thing that just strikes me as scary.
Ahmad, you know, any chances this fight won't be fixed?
I don't know. The promoter Damon Feldman has been accused of fixing matches in the past, and he hasn't completely denied that. Side note, though, I probably would pay to watch a Corey Dade versus Jimmy Israel celebrity boxing match. I think
that
could be something. We'll talk to Damon about that after the show, maybe. But you know, it's funny. I kind of have changed my mind on this. When I first saw it, I was like, oh, that could be very entertaining. And then, you know, I heard from Michael Skolnick, who was supposed to be here today, and he basically pointed out that this guy has gotten all of his fame from killing a kid.
That's right.
And we're now going to make him a celebrity out of that. It just seems extremely tasteless, and I'm kind of on that wagon now where, yeah, probably won't watch that. And DMX, I think he's got to channel the DMX at the end of Belly, you know, where he comes all nonviolent and righteous. He's got to remember that.
You know, the other part about this that gets me is part of Zimmerman's defense was that one of the defense witnesses argued that part of the reason he was in fear of his life is that he was a terrible boxer.
That's
His trainer testified that he was, on a scale of 1 to 10, a 5.
0.5.
He
wouldn't even let him spar.
He said that he was physically soft and fat, you know, quoting from his testimony. So how is it that all of a sudden this was a person who was in fear of his life, so he had to shoot a person who was unarmed, but now he's going to box for money?
And
so
why
this is part of the problem that I have.
Words. And also, why is he singling out wanting to fight a black guy? He specifically started targeting black male rappers as his opponents. Why them? What is it with him and black guys? What does he have to prove?
As after saying that the other aspect of his defense advanced in the public sphere by his brother is that, oh, he's not a racist. He has black friends. And so again, we have to ask kind of what
and
is
he,
this?
And he also said Trayvon's fists were deadly weapons, if I recall correctly. And now
Arsalan,
we're in a boxing ring.
What do you have to say about this, Arsalan?
Yeah, I mean, this certainly gets the Redunculus Award of the Week for me. I mean, here you have two knuckleheads who are essentially profiting, you know, whether monetarily or just by sheer celebrity off of Trayvon Martin's death. I mean, imagine getting famous for shooting and killing a black teenager. I mean, to me, this is completely absurd. And, you know, it doesn't matter that Zimmerman says that, you know, if he says that all of his money will go to charity. I mean, which one? The NRA? This is something that I think is... Like Corey and Ahmad have said, is sort of endemic of our American society today. And it's something that I think should not be condoned by anyone.
Can I just ask, Jimmy, you said you don't have a problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
And why is that? I mean, I'm not saying you should. I'm just curious. Is it because you feel that people are free to ignore it? Or is it that you feel
right.
like people
yeah,
have a right to earn a living, they do?
Yeah. You can ignore it. You can acknowledge it. You can do what you want. I mean, because the fact of the matter is, you know, Zimmerman needs a gig. He can't work anywhere. You know, DMX needs a gig. He can't work anywhere. And like I said, this is America. You got to hustle. You got to come up with some way to put food on the table. And
why couldn't other people refuse to participate? Take the air out of it. Why couldn't they just say, you know what? No, we're not. We're not going to give you a platform for whatever this is you're working through. Like just what Corey was saying, he seems to be specifically targeting black male rappers. And what if they all just said no?
What if? I'm okay with it.
DMX needs a paycheck.
That's exactly right. Let DMX earn his paycheck. If that's what he wants to do, because I mean, the truth to tell, I would probably give odds to DMX because he's a little lighter on his feet, you know, and so he may take Zimmerman down in three, at the end of three, but hey, man, it's still America, so let people earn.
You know what I wonder if this in some weird way, and I think, you know what, we've already given this like maybe 5 minutes more than it needed to. I mean, just, mm-hmm. you know, just to be honest about it. But I kind of wonder in some weird way, is this Zimmerman's kind of way of providing catharsis for everybody? I mean, he knows he's going to get beat. So is the idea of sort of providing
right.
this kind of catharsis in a weird way?
Because he's that selfless. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
but or it's a very complex mental makeup, wouldn't you say?
Perhaps.
Perhaps,
hey, but having said all of that, if Zimmerman has any squabbles at all, if he has any boxing training at all, he's going to take DMX down because he's got him at least by 75 pounds if he hasn't by an ounce.
Okay. All right. I think we've given this enough time, so let's move on. This is our weekly Barbershop Roundtable. We're joined by writer Jimmy Israel, commentator Arsalan Iftikhar, journalist Corey Dade, and Ahmad Omar. Back to you, Jimmy.
All right. Thanks, Michelle. You know, fans like me were excited to see the Seinfeld gang return in a Super Bowl commercial last week. But this week, some of Jerry Seinfeld's comments about diversity in comedy had people kind of scratching their heads. Michelle, we got a clip. Yep.
Yes, we do. In an interview with BuzzFeed Brews, Seinfeld was asked about criticism that his show Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee features mostly white men. And this is what he said.
Funny is the world that I live in. And I have no interest in gender or race or anything like that. But everyone else is kind of with their little calculating. Is this the exact right mix? To me, it's anti-comedy. It's more about PC nonsense than are you making us laugh or not?
Hmm.
All right.
Wow.
So what do other people think about this?
Well, somebody check in. I mean, Corey, you want a piece of this?
I mean, he has a point. I mean, funny is the number one goal for any comedian. You know, comedy reflects a comedian's life experiences or their worldview. You know, Seinfeld is a rich white Jewish guy from New York. You know, racial and ethnic diversity has never been central to his professional life. So why are we going to put that on him? Everyone doesn't have to be a race warrior or a gender warrior. He's certainly not doing the opposite. He's certainly not denigrating women. He's certainly not denigrating people of other races. But, you know, the truth is, you know, Seinfeld's good friend, Chris Rock, he has built his entire career off of drawing distinctions between people of different races, people of different cultures. He delves into and stews in that whole racial comedy. So, you know, for every Seinfeld who doesn't want to touch it, we got a Chris Rock. So fine.
And well, and this... not go ahead, A-Train.
Well, I was going to push back a little on what Corey said. You know, it kind of reminds. I mean, Jerry Seinfeld is clearly speaking from from his privileged place as a white heterosexual
That's right.
man. And you know, it is easy to scoff at diversity when you're a white male who's in the dominant demographic in virtually every workforce in America. And it reminds me of this concept of unconscious bias, which was penned by diversity expert Howard Ross, which basically says that, you know, we're not necessarily all racist or homophobes or misogynists, but we have these unconscious biases that come into play. And I think if you look at Seinfeld's show, it was a lily white show that was supposed to represent New York City. I mean, I think the only recurring character of color that I can remember was Babu Butt, the Pakistani restaurateur, who was actually played by an Israeli of Iraqi descent. And as the famous comedian Louis C.K. once said, I'm a white man. You can't even hurt my feelings. And so, okay, you know, we have to understand that there are a lot of these underlying dominant narratives that are being personified by Seinfeld in his privileged place.
I agree. Can I jump in here? Can I jump in here as the resident creative? You know what? Diversity.
Oh, excuse us.
You know what? Listen, no disrespect to anybody, but diversity is really only relevant if it serves a story purpose. So, I mean, look, on Welcome Back, Carter. It was relevant to the story purpose. It was relevant to the storyline. In Seinfeld, it's less so. And actually, what he's telling you by not including people in the world of Seinfeld, he's telling you about the characters and how myopic and self-centered they are.
Exactly.
So that actually speaks to the story in some very important ways, that they live in New York where people of color, where people of with diverse sexual backgrounds or whatever, they don't exist unless they're useful in some way.
Okay, but the way he responded to it sounds to me kind of defensive. It's like, this is PC nonsense. I mean, he's at a point in his career where he could, perhaps, I think part of what people are saying, you could afford to give a leg up to people and an opportunity to showcase their work. I mean, look at the Leno, you know, Jay Leno had his last show, you know, last night, and one of the people that he brought on as his last week of shows, he was bringing on the people who were important to him, and some of the people that were important to him were people like Arsenio Hall, who sub-hosted for him and gave him a platform, and there were also young performers who he showcased his children, and he brought a lot of them back. I mean, part of it is sort of giving other people an opportunity to shine. And I do have to point out that, look, Saturday Night Live executive producer Lorne Michaels is said to be kind of the man behind modern comedy. There's been a lot of conversation about the lack of diversity on Saturday Night Live up to this point. Now he's going to be behind, you know, Jimmy Fallon's show taking over the Tonight Show. He's going to be behind Seth Meyers' show, formerly of Saturday Night Live, taking over Fallon. I think part of what people are reacting to here is saying, okay, when do other people give other people a chance to shine, to showcase?
Well, real talk, you guys are really hitting against Jerry Seinfeld, but he tours with George Wallace and Mario Joyner, his best friends, and they open for him. So real talk.
But he could have said that, right?
He gives
Why
opportunities.
Why did he say that?
Because it's not his job to say that. He doesn't know anybody an explanation for how he does his show.
Then don't
that's
answer
his
the question.
Show.
But I don't think that's Seinfeld's purpose. I think, to Jimmy's point, is there's purposefulness. I mean, Saturday Night Live, Jimmy Fallon, Jay Leno, those are shows for broad consumption. They are meant to reflect a broader swath of America. So they have, to me, a greater responsibility. Seinfeld, as a private single comedian, he doesn't have that role.
Jimmy, I'm sorry, I wanted to get in on this.
Just the one little thing that was interesting to me. I'm falling on Corey's side over here, where it doesn't really bother me that much. And I think one of the things that was different with this and the whole issue that happened with Saturday Night Live was that Keenan from Saturday Night Live came out and said, you know, there aren't any funny black women, and that's why they're not on the show. Seinfeld didn't say that. He's like, I just don't really think about that. And that's been his MO his whole time, and it's been pretty funny. I like Seinfeld, so I'm all right with it, I think.
And also, SNL they've been over backwards to try to do comedy that brings in people of color, and they do it poorly.
Sure,
as
long as they're being demeaning.
Exactly.
You know, as long as they're perpetuating every stereotype that you have of both men and women as being oversexed, unintelligent.
Right.
You know,
so that
having
puts
a chip
them
on their
the
shoulder.
Hook to do it
and of course, and every time you talk about it, they say, oh, see, you've got a chip on your shoulder. Great. So it kind of works. It's a feedback loop, right?
Yeah.
So anytime anybody gets mad about it, they go, oh, you're so mad.
Yeah.
Mm. How convenient. Mm. So that was supposed to be funny. But it wasn't.
I left that one alone.
I know, right? All right, well, let's keep it. Let me just point out that, you know, black people aren't the only people who have complained about this. You know, there's another person who's kind of been weighing in on this. Felix Sanchez is a person who brought attention to the lack of diversity in the Kennedy Center Honors, who's also kind of been speaking about Saturday Night Live, too, who hasn't had a Hispanic lead character since Horatio Sanz left. So we'll see. You know, we'll see. One more thing I wanted to talk about. You know that the drugstore giant CVS says that they're skipping the smokes. The chain is going to phase out selling tobacco products by next October. And, you know, I think we have a diverse panel here, smokers and non-smokers. So I just have to ask people what they think about this. Arsalan, I think you're in the S column.
Yeah, you know, being a smoker, bad habit, I know. I think it's totally understandable what CVS is doing. I mean, you know, they want to, you know, perpetuate a you know, an image of health and wellness. What I don't want to give them full props on this yet, because, you know, they still sell beer and alcohol in their pharmacies as well. And so
they do.
I think one, yeah, they do. Once, not everywhere, but they do.
In the cough syrup? I didn't know that they.
No.
They do some places.
You can, you can get a 12-pack of Miller Lite in the freezers. And so I think that, you know, this is a good step. I can understand why they do it. But, you know, if they really want to do health and wellness, I think that they need to remove alcohol as well.
Corey, what do you think? You're in the N column, the non-smoker column.
I'm in the non-smoker column, but my view of it doesn't have anything to do with whether or not I'm a smoker. I think this is good brand management. CVS has gone whole hog into being a pharmacy and a health provider with their medical clinics, with Obamacare ramping up. They're all in. So, you know, they can't be true to their brand if they're selling cigarettes. Now, you know, alcohol notwithstanding. So I think the other part is this isn't exactly the biggest, you know, sacrifice on the part of CVS. You know, cigarette sales account for about 1%, 1.5% of their $123 billion annual revenue last year. So I think what's interesting is what this makes other competitors do. Walgreens, for example, this week, they just announced an effort to get into a smoking cessation program. So I think this is actually a good story of a company, a major company, putting its money where its mouth is.
Anybody else?
I think it's just kind of weird that there are cigarettes in a pharmacy. It's one of those things I think 10 years from now you'll be like, what? Did they have them at the hospital?
Right.
But then the weird question is, are they going to sell weed for medicinal purposes?
Oh.
That's the question I have. Anybody? All right. Well,
maybe in Colorado.
Okay. All right. So Jimmy Israel's a writer and adjunct professor of film and social media at Cuyahoga Community College. You can find his blog at jimmyisrael.com. He was with us from NPR member station WCPN in Cleveland. Arsalan Iftikhar is founder of themuslimguide.com and senior editor of Islamic Monthly with us from WBEZ in Chicago. Corey Dade is a contributing editor for The Root. That's an online publication that focuses on issues of particular interest to African Americans with us in D.C., along with Tell Me More editor Ahmad Omar. Thank you all so much.
Peace.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Yep.
And remember, if you can't get enough Barbershop Buzz on the radio, look for our Barbershop podcast in the iTunes store or at npr.org. That's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin. This is Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Let's talk more on Monday.